Good afternoon. It is 1:31 p.m., February 18, 2026. This is an informal hearing, and the hearing is on case numbers PU-25-285 and PU-25-286. And we'll go around and get everyone to introduce themselves in a moment here and take opening comments from the other commissioners. But first, I will just clarify that the informal hearing process is only about undisputed information. If any disputes should arise, this hearing will be suspended and a formal hearing will be scheduled. And I think that's the only opening comments I have. Commissioner Hagenhofer.
I was patiently waiting for you to complete. I have no opening comments.
Commissioner Kingston?
I don't have anything else to add. Thank you.
Okay. Identify yourself on the record, please.
Victor Shook, PSC staff.
And Derek, please do the same. And then we have the applicant start, so just go ahead and take it away from there.
Derek Bulwa, Beck Communications Cooperative. Do we have any visitors online?
Yeah. This is Ben Dickens. I'm here with my partner, Sal Talifer, and we're representing Mr. Bulwa's company today, Washington, D.C.
Okay, and our tech person just stepped out. I don't know if we can get a little more volume. Oh!
Can you go over there?
Can you make the volume a little louder?
So that was the Bluestem Law Firm. They represent Beck.
Oh. Bluestem?
Bluestem.
Bluestem.
Yeah.
Okay. And if not, when it's their opportunity to speak, we'll just have them get a little closer to the mic. But we'll have Clayton work on it now that he's, I know he's in the room.
Were they the only ones? Derek. Were they the only ones in attendance?
Also, Jason Topp. I am from Lumen. We filed comments in this matter and available to weigh in as needed.
Okay, well, thank you guys very much. I appreciate the opportunity to come in and summarize the application that we put forth, summarize the comments that we then put forth, and then comments from CenturyLink as well. The Beck Communications Cooperative is a 74-year-old communications cooperative, currently with $266 million in telecommunications assets, $23 million in local economic contribution, 96 employees, and it offers up to 10 gigabit services across its fiber network in 56 different communities in North Dakota. We're headquarters in Steele, North Dakota. We have a significant office here in Bismarck, both our service centers as well, and an office in Valley City Exchange, the exchange in question today, with a service center. This map reflects the serving area of the Beck Communications Cooperative. It serves the area in and around Bismarck, down to the South Dakota border, and east to about Crystal Springs. Then there's a gap, and then it picks up on the other side of Jamestown and works its way out to about Mapleton. And the exchange in question is in the middle of that particular piece. That's the Valley City Exchange. And that construct to the right was a combination of the Valley City Exchange, overbuild, the acquisition of Intercommunity Telephone Company, and Absaraka Telephone Cooperative.
And when were Intercommunity and Absaraka obtained?
2019.
Okay.
So Beck has served the Valley City Exchange for about 11 years. Started in, I think, February of 2015, and we provide services to 100% of the 3,661 locations with our fiber network. The highest speed that is offerable on the network to the subscribers is 10 gigabits per second. And the 3,661 locations are reflected in the map, and that is the broadband fabric from the NTIA. So 100% of them are served by BEC. We have voice services to 100% of the market as well. We have some notable customers that reflect our efforts there, Valley City State University, Barnes County PSAP, a lot of cell towers, the hospital, Valley City High Schools, most businesses, and most of the residential market. One would ask, well, how did you do that? Well, in the Valley City Exchange area, as customers gave us feedback that their service was not acceptable to them and they wanted it to be expanded, we applied for 2 Community Connect grants through the USDA to help rebuild the rural parts of the exchange, and then we got some RDOF funding to help rebuild the rest of it, and then the city of Valley City was constructed with working capital from the BEC Communications Cooperative. There is local service in the area. We have a customer service center right in downtown Valley City. We have 24-hour tech support that's available. People will call in, and if we have to dispatch someone, we can dispatch on request 24 hours a day. We have after hours. We also have online chat, email, and walk-in service. So we have the full spectrum of services in Valley City that we offer everywhere else. Also, in that particular area, servicing not just Valley City, but the surrounding area that we have overbuilt. We have field technicians, we have field engineers, and we have enterprise engineers to deal with issues with the businesses and their unique needs. So we have the Valley City's call center there, we have a plant operations facility there, and just outside of Wheatland, we have a very large plant operations and warehousing center where we warehouse equipment, we reels of cable, inventory. So that's our, for the eastern side of the state, that's where the majority of the inventory is kept. And, you know, we've got a pretty big reel yard there to warehouse the fiber.
Derek, can I ask you a question? It's about Are those handouts for us?
No.
Okay.
Those are just, if I get questions, I can go back and reference the documents that we
Okay.
We have. And then if you, I probably should have given you copies of that.
That's fine. No, I'm fine. Okay. It won't be part of the record.
Yep. We're a cooperative. So one of the key pillars of a cooperative is community engagement. So during Valley City State University New Student Day, you know, when the semesters change and new students come in, we set up there. Students come in. We provide immediate sign-up and deployment of services to their apartment or the houses that they rent. Also, as a cooperative, we offer grant opportunities for nonprofits in the community and for community entities. So they can apply for a grant to help meet some of the needs in the communities that we serve. And then also, we have a service day when and the market is asked to come in and visit with our customer service rep, meet them face-to-face, and it's nice to see a face for the customer. And likewise, when the customers call in and they meet someone called Becky, they now know who that is. I want to take a moment and summarize some of the comments and some of the information in the application that we provided and give you a little bit of context to them. So in CenturyLink's comments, one of the things that they reported was that they serve 2,465 locations of the 3,661, which is 67%. Now the map on the right with the red dots is the CenturyLink service location map based on the broadband fabric. On the left-hand side is the BEC Communications Cooperative map. We serve 100% of the locations. So in their filings, they stated that they provide service to 276 voice line customers and 85 broadband line customers. And that's, again, those are from their filings. BEC, we serve 858 voice line customers voice lines to 538 voice line customers. And that was in the application that we put in. And the ratio of service is 3 to 1. So we serve three voice line customers for every one that they serve. And again, 100% of it is serviceable with broadband and with phone service. I did a little exercise a little bit back. I looked at the, which was included in our application, which we looked at the number of service complaints from 2014 to 2025, and I was able to get the data from the Public Service Commission, and I graphed it out by company to see, you know, where the service issues were. And I wasn't really expecting to see what I got, but 87% of the service complaints for the last, whatever it is, the last 10 years, 11 years, were filed against CenturyLink or Qwest. That's a pretty big number. All the rest of them were distributed across, and Beck had no service complaints, but we had one easement complaint. So that's just a point of reference, and maybe that you know, there's a message in there somewhere about the quality of the infrastructure that's in play. Which then leads to the next question. In my application in Exhibit 9, I provided a bunch of photographs, and the photographs were of the plant and the plant that was not being maintained to what would be the same standard that we would maintain it. Fiber cabinets were open and unsecured, making it accessible to weather, to pests, and to people. A visible wiring was exposed. Aerial wires were hanging from the poles in the public areas. And again, that's in there. Is that the driving reason for some of the complaints? Because the plant is not well maintained. In CenturyLink's statement or their comment was copper TDM voice technology and traditional ILEC concepts is nearing the end of life. Now, clearly in this, the message from them in their comments, that was them stating that. Mm-hmm. I think maybe the pictures back up that statement. There are some other key highlights out of their comments. CenturyLink commented, it confirms that broadband is not available to the entire exchange. It states it offers phone service across the entire exchange, but there's no maps, no references, no data, no plant or facilities described backing up the claim that they make that available to the entire exchange. CenturyLink does not oppose Beck's ETC designation. CenturyLink does not oppose or does not question Beck's fitness or ability to provide the service. It does oppose the relinquishment of its ILEC certification. CenturyLink asserts that the NDPSC does not have ILEC certification authority. But it did not raise the objection in the MLGC Leonard Kindred process. It did not. It stated in the Red River Wahpeton proceeding, does not object to the commission assigning Red River as an incumbent local exchange carrier. But now it opposes Beck's action in the Valley City Exchange. That's a unique change of position. Some additional comments. Investment in such technology in remote areas is not likely to be feasible soon, absent unique circumstances. This is one of their comments in the reply comments. So they're looking forward to, you know, what may or may not be happening with their network or their business, I guess. Provider of last resort obligations impose significant expenses to maintain telephone service to remote customers. Again, is in their comments. That does reflect what we saw in the pictures. CenturyLink does not qualify for ongoing federal high-cost support in North Dakota, but received $33.9 million of CAF Phase 2 disbursements in North Dakota between 2016 and 2011. It seems maybe the funds weren't used in this particular exchange.
Derek, I think is it between 2016 and 2011?
2021.
The slide says 2021.
2016 and 2021. My slip. Thank you. CenturyLink does not address the fact that this commission has granted substantially similar relief in two prior proceedings, both with MLGC and with Red River. And again, these are basically comments from their documents. So the request that I have, the relief that I'm seeking from the commission, is grant back to CPCN for the Valley City Exchange, designate BEC as the ILEC of record for the Valley City Exchange for the purposes of North Dakota law. Expand BEC's ETC designation to include the Valley City Exchange and reclassify CenturyLink certification in the Valley City Exchange to a competitive carrier consistent with North Dakota law. So those are the sum total of my comments. I'm happy to answer any questions.
So I am sometimes slow with notes, and you don't talk slow. I asked you about the acquisition of Intercommunity and Absaraka, and you said about 2019. Then at about the same time in the presentation, did you say you've been serving in the Valley City area for about 10 years?
We began service in the Valley City Exchange in February of 2015.
Of 2015. Yes. So you were over there a few years before those acquisitions.
Yes. We had substantially completed the overbuild of the exchange, both in the rural and in the city.
We had another hearing this morning, so I didn't get to review the filing as thoroughly as I hoped to. So I don't know, either Commissioner, did either of you have questions, or Victor? I'm just seeing if there's, I had a few questions, but I think you've pretty well hit them.
Yeah. I just want to confirm, so there are 3,661 serviceable addresses within the Valley City Exchange, and you are able to service all of them?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And as of today, you service, I think you said the number earlier, and I can just get it off the slide if need be, but you, how many telephone customers do you serve there
today?
We serve
538 telephone customers, and those telephone customers yield 858 voice lines. So some are residential, some are business.
Yep. Okay, and then CenturyLink had stated what their number was. I think it was
276 voice lines, 85 broadband lines, and we serve 2,609 broadband lines.
2,609 broadband, okay.
So if I do a little math, you know, they serve roughly 361 customers. We serve 3,147.
Ratio.
Well, the 3-to-1 ratio was just on the phone lines. It's a fat math, but probably we serve 87% of the market.
And then, as far as, so some of the pictures you have of CenturyLink's plant in the Valley City Exchange, I just want to, I'm not a telecom expert on facilities and what is contained within some of those PEDs and other things. So those PEDs, I think there was some reference to electrical power being within those.
Some of the cabinets could have electrical power in them, depending upon what they're used for. The phone lines will have both a DC voltage on it. If it's a dedicated, say a T1, there could be fairly high voltage on that. So there's a variety of different configurations that they could be used for.
Sure. And it's hard. Are you able to tell by looking at, like, if you brought back up those slides with the pictures, do you know well enough to identify what's likely in There's a pointer on that, a laser pointer.
You might want to use a microphone, please.
And again, some of this technology may have been deployed before, you know, I was out of college. So this here looks like it's probably got some power in it. I think that cabinet there likely has power in it. The pedestals, likely not, right? Anything, those things, they probably don't. But that could, depending upon what its purpose is, right?
What about that line hanging down? What did you
so
say?
That would have normal DC voltage on it from the central office because it powers the phones. If there was a T1 running across that line, there would be substantially more voltage because the voltage is quite high for those. But these right here, you know, if it's a normal phone line, you're talking, you know, 12 volts DC.
Do you know how many amps?
I couldn't tell you.
Okay. So you had referenced the ones that definitely would likely have power in them. I think that top middle box.
Yeah.
Do you know what voltage those would be at? Is that like 120 volt?
Yeah, it would have normal. That out in the field like that might have normal AC power to it.
Okay.
And then this one down here likely would have some AC power to it. Again, it depends on what they're doing. Are they distributing more? You know what? You know, it depends on what's in the cabinet.
Sure. And then this is more of a curiosity question. How do you arrange for the power to serve those boxes? Like if Beck is like not in for these ones, but if Beck has similar boxes out there.
You'll have a power meter out there.
Okay.
So on the pole, there'll be a power meter.
Okay.
Like this one looks like it's on a building or something or on a pole. Mm-hmm. There could be a power meter on that one. And then, you know, that one, there may be one or next to it.
Sure.
Because you have to sign up for the power and
sure.
pay for it.
That's what I kind of assumed, but I just wasn't sure if you had some other special arrangement with utilities for that service, but it's just metered power.
There is some technology that we've used in the past where power is carried along the line going out there, express power, where they've done that. But that's long since, you know, had its useful life, and I don't know that is or isn't either of those.
Okay.
I didn't see that one up on your pictures.
Your microphone.
Thank you. I didn't see that one up there. Can you explain this one a little bit?
That looks like it's just a passive pedestal for splicing wires that are coming in together.
And not active?
I would say that does not look like it's active.
But taped up. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, I got through my notes now, and I have one more question for you. And I'm not reaching a decision here. I'm laying out a scenario to form a question. But you're requesting CPCN and ETC status here. And I get how that benefits Beck and it's up to you to make the arguments as you have how it benefits your customers. If those are granted, what is the functional difference to you in whether CenturyLink's certificate is relinquished or not?
Well, I think you first have to establish who has the ongoing responsibility. Right? In the case right now, technically they have the responsibility to meet the carrier of last resort obligations. They have the responsibility to serve everybody. And they're making the argument that they do. I'm trying to make an argument that they may not be. And since I've already made the investment to serve everybody, I should be recognized to having the status having done so.
Okay. Any other questions, Victor?
Mine were all answered.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, could I have the opportunity to address a couple points?
Is this Jason?
This is.
So typically, as I think was pretty clear in our notice of opportunity, an informal hearing is only for undisputed information. And we have, and typically the applicant is the only one that speaks in them. Now, we have had exceptions to that where often it's, not often because it hasn't even happened often, but when it has happened, I think it's been usually a question for the applicant and maybe a customer of theirs has the answer and they don't. So rather than delaying everything for a late filed exhibit, we just allow someone in the room to answer it. I know in one instance, we allowed a large customer of an applicant to make a presentation, but it was supportive. But there was no request for a formal hearing, and an informal hearing is, as I said, only for undisputed evidence. And based on your comments that you filed, I expect that what you would say is probably not supportive, but in dispute of something. And so I will not accept that. And if you, I guess the one scenario I can see where maybe that would be problematic is if an applicant comes in and spews mistruths or something like that, and then there's an appeal process. If we reach our decision based on the information we've received, anyone is welcome to appeal that in court. But so I guess if you have something that is completely undisputed, I would accept it in a friendly way. But if there's anything disputed, no, that is not what this type of hearing consists of.
I appreciate those limitations. And we won't get into disputes about the facts. We certainly could go that direction. But I would say two things. One, our comments did ask for a hearing if the commission was inclined not to dismiss this. And so that is a request that we have made. Secondly, we would ask the commission to look at the definition of incumbent local carrier under North Dakota Century Code 4921016, which we have addressed in our comments. And I will leave it at that.
Okay, point taken. Is there any other information to be added? I want to say that first of all, I ask the applicant, are there any objections to the evidence produced becoming part of the official record upon which an official decision will be determined?
No objections.
Okay. The evidence and staff?
No objection from staff.
The evidence will be added to our official record. Does anyone else have anything else to append?
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me okay?
I hear you. I don't know who's talking.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Ben Dickens. I've turned up my volume a little bit.
Hopefully. Okay.
I would just like to note that my colleague, Mr. Topp, had noted.
I wouldn't get into anything disputed, sir, or it'll be we'll be going to a formal hearing.
I'm not. I'm just going to say that we stand on the papers we filed.
Does that conclude your comment?
Yes.
Okay. So then I'm going to ask again, now that something else has been said, are there any objections to the evidence produced today, the slides, the recording becoming part of the official record upon which a decision will be made?
No objection. No objection from staff.
Okay. The evidence will be added to our official record. And this informal hearing on cases number PU-25-285 and PU-25-286 is concluded. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.